With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Adam Carter drawing a line. We found where he draws the line, right there. Maybe we'll tell you what we're talking about.
You're a very rude person. The way you treat
Adam Carter
is horrible. And the way you treat other people are horrible.
Oh, I am horrible after the comment you just said off air. Hey, it's 12:03. Hartman Gensel Carter here. What do we have for you today? Well, Adam just told us. Mm-hmm. And I just said, let's play the interview. So why don't you tell people?
Well, I just got off the phone with Sheriff Chris Fitzgerald of Barron County today, as we'll have it in the news. 1 month today since Jamie Claus disappeared, her parents found murdered, obviously, and it really sounds like they're no closer to solving it. But the sheriff, he's very open about their investigation, what he can talk about, and about what they know, what they don't know. You know, they put those descriptions of two vehicles.
Charger.
He told me that one of the red, the Charger, they haven't quite ruled it out yet, but they're leaning towards maybe that wasn't it. But there's still the other vehicle, either a dark Ford Edge or Lexus. Is that what it was? Or Acura. It's either an Acura or a Ford Edge.
Okay.
That they still think that was in the vicinity at the time. They've expanded like the surveillance video that they're looking at to try to piece it together.
Well, let's do this. That's a good kind of primer.
Yep.
Kind of let's play it at 210.
Sure.
Right? What we'll do is I'll dub in the questions. No, we'll play Adam's interview at 210. Excuse me. It's like a given for me. I walk in here, I'm not coughing, and then I start coughing.
Yeah.
In this room.
One of the great lines ever was uttered by Rocco Bonello, a former producer here who now works over at for the Hubbard Radio Empire.
Oh, don't talk about nothing.
He said, I think I'm just the age of the building and everything he once said. I think I caught a cold from Cedric Adams.
Maybe I'm sick from this plate. I mean, I'm sick in the head.
Well, we've got roaches up here. I mean, am I spoiling that or should I talk about
that? No, I mean, wait, seriously.
We've seen cockroaches in various rooms of the building.
This floor is vile and disgusting.
And that's just the employees.
Yes. Cambria Gallery, gorgeous. Third floor, I'm going to give that a solid, right? It's not spectacular. So fifth floor, fine. I don't know.
Fifth floor, potential. That's what I call it.
Potential.
Well, they've got that big room where we have all our big meetings.
Yeah, where you don't show, and then if you do, you're on your phone. And again, if there's ever any doubt about your daughter being your daughter, we're talking last night while you're on the phone, and then I try to talk to Morgan. She makes one comment. I make another comment. And then she's like on her phone. It's like, yep, just like talking to dad during the afternoon.
That's my line. It's like me at the 2 o'clock hour. I'm out.
Exactly.
I've had enough of you.
What about the mysterious fourth? See, I'm coughing.
Yeah, the fourth floor.
The fourth floor. What is going on? I've never been.
I don't know if I've ever been on the fourth floor.
Lindsay, fourth floor for you ever?
Oh, I think it's rented out.
See, we don't know, do we?
I think someone works up there because I've been in the elevator with people before who have gone to the fourth floor.
Caravan.
You've been down in the basement?
There's a caravan on the fourth floor.
The basement's pretty cool, I guess.
Isn't there a sound studio down there?
It's like a sound studio agency, but apparently they have a bar in like their lobby, and they have like communal happy hours and stuff.
What? Okay. I'll be there at 3:15. Well, remember we had the biker? What was he? He was the guy who was making fun of people who don't respect bikers, and he worked downstairs, and he came up like 3-4 years ago.
Well, there's also a guy in the building, I don't know if he's here every day, but who has a big, I think it's a Burmese mountain dog, beautiful dog.
And he brings the dog in?
Brings the dog in. It's great.
I've never seen the dog.
Yeah.
Is it possible that's what's causing me to cough?
Could be.
81807. What is causing me to cough when I enter this studio? Wow, this opens up. I mean, a lot of trouble on this one. 81807. A good guest on school safety. a man behind a long story in the Washington Post and a book that is coming out. It is a $2.7 billion industry for all the valid reasons on trying to provide greater safety to stop these shootings that happen way, way, way too much. Good guest on that at 12:35. Dara at 2:35, Adam's interview with the sheriff at 2:10. And then we have a two-part interview with Bill O'Reilly. Tape with Bill O'Reilly at about 11 o'clock. It goes just short of 20 minutes. First part is on his book, another New York Times best-selling list. He's talking about another one, How Adam Carter Killed
the Show.
WCCO Radio.
On a day-to-day basis.
And particularly this show. No, but it's this killing series, Killing the SS. You've always been a big defender of the SS. I know you're... Yeah. You're disappointed.
My next tattoo.
Martin Dugard and Bill O'Reilly. But we then spent a lot of time on Trump and Acosta, Trump and the media, in the last, I'd say, 5-6 minutes about his departure. So
does it get heated?
No.
Oh.
No, but I push him.
Does he call you a pinhead at any point?
No, he gets animated, and he's Bill. I mean, he's separating his shoulder multiple times, patting himself on the back. And I say during the interview, I said it while I was at the Fan. I said, I recorded the O'Reilly Show. It was the only news show Monday through Friday did, and at times I found him an egomaniac, infuriating, but rude at times. But I also found him compelling, interesting. On Fox, he was practically Bernie Sanders, right, at the time. And by the way, he would have on Bernie Sanders, Dennis Kucinich, John Stewart. The lefties would go on O'Reilly's show, but you can't have Bill O'Reilly on a show, I don't think, without saying what. There were New York Times reports of 6 settlements, including Lise Wheel, who was on this show many times, a settlement of $32 million. So I try to be respectful, but I try to push him on stuff. So we'll play that at 1:10. Some big news involving one of the three of us. We'll talk about that when we come back. Adam has an update right now. It appears Chris Wallace will get the president on Sunday. That will be rather interesting. Again, Bill O'Reilly, 1:10, a good reporter for the Washington Post, is working on a book on school safety, 12:35. Adam's interview with the sheriff on Jamie Kloss at 2:10. Dara at 2:35. Lindsay, the microphone is yours.
Oh, man, I'm so nervous. I actually am incredibly nervous right now because I think it's been clear to everyone that I enjoy what I do on this show. But next Wednesday will be my last day. As I'm telling people, it's not goodbye. It's just see you later. Because I'm heading down to the U.S. Virgin Islands to volunteer with an organization called All Hands and Hearts. It's a nonprofit that does emergency smart response. So they have teams all over the world right now. In fact, I was just watching last night at the team that they're putting together to get on the ground in California following the wildfires. So their entire plan is emergency response. And after Hurricane Michael hit the Florida Panhandle, this is something I've been wanting to do since 2011. My close friend, my other Adam C. in my life, volunteered in the Philippines in 2011.
Is it with the same organization?
Yes. Okay. Yes. At one point, these two organizations were two separate nonprofits. Petra Nemakova, who's the very outspoken supermodel who survived the Indian Ocean.
Literally holding onto a tree.
Yes, tsunami. Right? She is one of the leaders of this organization, and she met this other man on a missions trip, and they decided, you know, we're great alone. Why don't we partner up? And they became All Hands and Hearts. So it is
If Adam knew supermodels were involved, he might be involved in this also.
Or European models.
European models, yes. No, but it is an organization I've been paying attention to for a really long time, and as I said, when Hurricane Michael hit and I just saw the destruction, it was kind of the push I needed to look into this a little bit further. You apply. They don't just take anyone. At least I don't think so. You apply and you get placed where you're going to go. So I'll be on the island of St. Thomas. Obviously, Hurricane Irma devastated that region last September. I actually have
good
a friend who lives
down
there.
St. Thomas got a great football team.
Where the winners play. We carry their games.
I'm actually going to be bringing a bunch of Tommy stuff with me, you know, pay attention to the games.
Hey, did they get a new AD, by the way? I don't know if you – no, sorry.
No. I think we missed that press conference.
Yeah.
But I'll be down there for a month.
Yep.
And
what do you think day-to-day life is going to be?
I can actually tell you. The thing that really interests me about it is that there is a lot of structure because there are volunteers from all over the world going in. It's all ages, all demographics. Retirees make up a big portion of it. College students who have time off. Obviously, the holidays picks up because people have time off from work. So as I'm looking last night at kind of the Facebook group and making my packing list because it's pretty intense, there are people coming in from all over the world. So our day starts at 8 a.m. That's when we get to the work site. A typical day is a lot of muck and gutting, which is, you know, before you can rebuild anything or salvage anything, you have to get out everything that's been damaged by water. So it's a lot of sanitation. It's a lot of mold removal.
How many times do you plan on washing your hands?
Oh, man. I know the bottle of sanitizer I just ordered off of Amazon is aggressive.
It's the size of this room.
Yeah. I got to get one of those really awesome masks like I'm from Breaking Bad, you know, with the filters on the side.
Yes.
So we work from 8 to 4 every day, and then we have a communal dinner. We live communally in the school. It's not glamorous. They're like bunk beds that look like the stepbrothers built them from the movie. They're, you know, wood bunks. I'm bringing down an inflatable mattress and mosquito netting. And I actually have a friend who lives in St. Thomas, and her home was completely destroyed in Hurricane Irma. They've since been able to rebuild. But the
Did
unfortunate,
she inspire you a little bit?
A little bit, yeah. I think it's really heartbreaking that it's almost 16 months later and a lot of these people can't even go back to their homes. And what I've heard from the people that I've spoken with through All Hands and Hearts is that, say you're a business owner and your business was destroyed, but your home was also destroyed, a lot of them put their priority into getting their business back up. So that was the main point. You know, if I can get my business back up running, I can make money, but then they still have no place to live.
Yeah.
So a lot of the projects they do are schools, daycares, homes. Lots of projects. So, yeah, I don't know what to expect on a daily basis except for I know when I'll be working and I know when I'll be sleeping.
Yep. So you leave. Our last day here is the day before Thanksgiving.
Yes.
You leave when?
I leave the weekend after Thanksgiving.
Weekend after Thanksgiving.
So that's another part that is a little bit hard for me to wrap my head around because I'm a planner. I like to have things put in place. But I'm flying into San Juan. And I have to get on a little puddle jumper from San Juan to St. Thomas. And things are still a little chaotic down there with travel schedules.
Sure.
In fact, a lot of the ferries haven't even reopened. So I might get it to San Juan and have to stay a day or stay 2 days until I can get to St. Thomas. So I'm just kind of figuring that all out. And
so they'll kind of update you once you arrive in San Juan.
Yes. I actually just spoke with a woman earlier today, one of the volunteer coordinators, to confirm that I was still coming down. And yeah, so I'm taking donations because I'll be going to Home Depot and buying lots of supplies. They have a Amazon wish list of what they ask for people to bring down because this is all volunteer base.
Right.
Everyone goes down. They cover your meals and your housing, but you pay out of pocket
That's
for
it.
Your travel expenses, your luggage, your the amount of DEET I bought. I didn't even know this existed. Maybe you knew this, that there's this stuff you coat your clothing in to help detract mosquitoes. Perithrin?
Yeah.
I don't even know how to pronounce it. But the amount that I just bought on Amazon, again, it's intense.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. So, but yeah, I'm excited. I said on Twitter, I am so excited for this opportunity, but I also know what I'm giving up to do it. But also, I'm 32. I don't know if kids are in the plan. I'll say this, and he doesn't like it when I give him praise because it makes him uncomfortable, but when you have a partner that you go to and you say, hey, I have this crazy idea and it would actually mean a lot to me and I really want to do it. And they're like, yeah, you do it. I'll take on the extra responsibility. I'll make sure everything stays great here at home. I mean, I'm so, so lucky that John loves me in a way that he's letting me do this. I also think he's excited to have, you know, a month of video games without me there.
He's scheduled 4 parties already.
Adam and I
are in for 3 of them.
I don't doubt it. I'll give you guys the address and tell you the garage code because he told me last night he's not leaving the couch.
Give it out on air right now.
Yeah, there we go.
I mean, you'll be gone. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's up to John.
Yeah.
Okay, but if people want to offer a donation, because you mentioned that, how can people do that?
The easiest way is just go to my website, lindsaygensel.com. I kind of talked about my thought process behind choosing this trip, why I'm going, what I expect to happen, that sort of thing. So you can read about it there. And I keep saying to people, because people keep asking, well, what are you going to do when you get back? And I don't know. And that's scary. It is very scary to leave and not know what I'm going to do when I get back. But that being said, I keep repeating it's not goodbye. It's just see you later.
Have you found a website down there to send me prep every day at 8 o'clock?
We do have internet at the house. I am hoping to do a lot of blogging and writing and podcasting while I'm down there. I'm hoping that the people who live on the island of St. Thomas are willing to share their stories with me, because that's a huge part of why I want to go. I think we're inundated every day with a new disaster, a new sad story, whether it's a shooting or what's happening in California, which I don't even want to get started on because I was reading an article last night about the animals and I cried myself to sleep, because sometimes the world seems like too much to handle. But I think we move on too quickly and we forget about what happened.
Right. We do. Lives happen. For those of us who know you, none of this surprises us, because your heart is immense and you want to help people out, and you do that on a regular basis. And it is not easy to say, I have this career at this particular time. I am surrounded by two handsome, smart, kind, caring. No.
I like the
emotionally stable.
The shirtless calendar to take Mitt with me. Adam said you were going to get that printed.
Yeah. I've got a copy.
But it takes balls to do this. I mean, it just does to go to a place where you're helping out, but you're leaving an awful lot. And whenever I'm out somewhere, wherever I'm with my friends, even the times on air when somebody says, what's Lindsay like? I always say this. I say, she is one of the most authentic individuals I have ever met in my life. Adam has known me for a long time. Adam knows among the qualities that drives me the most nuts, phoniness. I hate that. I'd rather somebody was cruel and mean on a regular basis.
Me too.
Than, hey, buddy, how you doing? How's your – oh, fabulous. Or, that's so great, in that phony laugh. You have none of that. You are real. I know that. There are times when you look at me and say, don't talk to me today.
Yeah.
Or you say, you were not doing it this way. Or other times you say, I got it. You know, where I know who you are that day, because there's nothing you don't convey. And sometimes because of that, I'm hiding over here in the corner. And other times I'm thinking, I'm so lucky to have you professionally in my life.
I appreciate that. And like I said, I don't know what's going to happen. I have appreciated your guys' support so much, because it was very hard for me to tell you, because I do respect you both so much. And I respect what we've been able to build on this show. And that's just kind of a motivator to go and do some good and come back with a full heart. And yeah.
Bearded guy?
Well, I just concur, and like you said, it's hard to fake being that way, and just the fear of doing that. And then, you know, for better or worse, millennials kind of get that reputation as they hop around and could do that. But I think a lot of the part that people, the older generations, I can't believe I'm considering myself now an older generation.
Look in the mirror.
But the criticism, I think, that the older generations give millennials is because there's probably some jealousy involved in it too. Because,
yeah.
I mean, don't we all wish that
fearlessness,
yeah, and have that ability to, as you say, the balls, the cojones,
yes,
the stones,
yes,
to
the
do something like that.
Testicular fortitude.
To do something like that, and good on you. And like you said, I mean, this world, you're right. I mean, especially when you have to come in here and digest it every day and consume it and get various opinions on certain things, it can be mind-numbing at times. And to be able to just do that and help your fellow man in a good way, and
it's great,
not be, you know, too braggadocious about it, and just good on you, and we're gonna miss you, but I'm sure our paths will cross again.
It is 12:28 here on Lindsay Gensel's station, WCCO. A lengthy story in the Washington Post. Man behind it, John Woodrow Cox, good enough to join us. School shootings have fueled a $2.7 billion school safety industry. What makes kids safer? He's going to expand on this series with a book, and that will be coming out soon. John, thank you so much for the time. So let's start with that question. $2.7 billion has been spent. And as you point out in the story, that doesn't even include all of the money spent for police officers, for resource officers. But then how do we know what is working? What sort of follow-up are we seeing either within those areas or all across the country?
Well, yeah, I mean, and that, actually, that's every year. That's $2.7 billion a year.
So yeah.
This is a massive industry. And, you know, we set out to answer that very question is, you know, schools are spending all this money and making all this investment, but what actually works and what doesn't work? And unfortunately, our government has done very little, well, virtually no research on what does and doesn't work. There was a Johns Hopkins study a couple of years ago that basically said, we don't know. So that the evidence out there, the literature out there is conflicting and limited. So we set out to actually survey several dozen schools that had experienced shootings themselves to figure out, hey, what did you learn from that experience? And only one of the schools of the 34 that got back to us, only one said that any kind of safety technology might have made a difference. So by and large, schools responded with either they said it was sort of beyond their control or that no sort of technology would have prevented the incidents at their schools.
I want to get to that in a second because that is a rather remarkable statement. But when you say we're not seeing this oversight from government, I am surprised by that. Have we watched, have we heard from different politicians through different administrations saying that we need to do this, or have people been extraordinarily quiet in that area?
You know, I think there's just this assumption that the quote unquote experts and consultants know what they're talking about. I don't think there's really been any calls for research into what works and what doesn't beyond this one Johns Hopkins study, because I think people just take for granted that things like metal detectors and armed resource officers and, you know, facial recognition software and, you know, bulletproof whiteboards and things like that. I think people just sort of assume, well, this should work.
Yeah.
But the reality is, that's not the reality.
Right.
That's what we found.
Right. I mean, we see, I mean, John, you think about, as you're saying, we're approaching $3 billion every year. We have some type of story related to this way too often. Sometimes it's one that draws the entire nation to pay attention. Sometimes it's that city, it's that state. I am baffled and angry that we don't see some of that follow-up. So tell me about reaching out to schools. How many of them were responsive when you and your partners reached out?
So we surveyed every school that had some incident of gun violence since Sandy Hook. So basically the last 5-6 years, and that was nearly 80 schools, and 34 of the schools got back to us, which we were really happy about. You know, a lot of schools are going through litigation. They can't really talk about, you know, what they went through. But the idea was to just understand what they learned from those experiences. And by and large, over and over, what they said was things like preparation were essential. So, you know, drills that teach kids to lock down, to evacuate. Frankly, just being the ability to lock a door quickly consistently saves lives. Just if you can lock your classroom door and find a safe space and the shooter can't get in, that consistently saves lives. But, you know, there was another focus certainly in the piece on, you know, not just mitigating harm once the shooting has started, but, you know, what do we do to actually prevent these things? And there just hasn't been nearly enough investment in that part of this.
Well, I was drawn to part of that, too, because it is a lengthy story. Again, John Woodrow Cox is with us. When will your book be coming out, by the way?
That's a great question. It's going to be a little while. You know, my deadline is next year. So, you know, the book world moves a little bit more slowly.
Sure.
Than the newspaper world. But I would say probably 2020. That's the hope. You know, probably when this is coming up again in the campaign season, I suspect that's when the book will be out.
You write about one of the families who lost a child. They lost their 6-year-old son, Dylan, and how they have been involved with an organization launching Say Something Anonymously Report System, which allows users to privately submit safety concerns through a computer. I just yesterday, at the time, we didn't know if we were going to have you on or not, talked about the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel when they reported on the 30 different people who were aware of certain acts of violence that Nicholas Cruz had been a part of months, if not years, leading up to Parkland. So tell me about how this Say Something Anonymous Report System is working, and are many places using this?
Yeah, I think that's among the more promising pieces of technology out there is, you know, the Hockleys lost their son in the Sandy Hook shooting, and they immediately started this organization, Sandy Hook Promise. And as part of that, they have campaigned all over the country, you know, imploring students to speak up. It's the see something, say something motto. But what they heard over and over is that kids were just unwilling to do that, either because they were afraid of repercussions or just because they're kids and they don't want to stick their necks out. So they developed this technology. It comes in the form of an app, online, phone call, and basically it's an anonymous reporting system. So if you see a kid who's made a threat on Instagram, if you've heard about it in school, you can anonymously report. It's a 24/7 operation, and the kids, the people who report it, their identity is protected. So then that information goes to law enforcement, it goes to school administrators, and they can respond really quickly. And it can be anything from a kid making threats, which they've had a number of those, or things like if a kid is suicidal. You know, if your friend is talking about harming themselves, then it allows kids or teachers, parents, anybody to anonymously report this stuff. And I think that, you know, what we hear over and over is that kids hear about these things. You know, if it is a shooter, if this shooter is a student, kids hear about these things before they happen, but they often don't speak up.
And do we know how many places, districts, schools are using it?
Hundreds now. Okay. And it's going to be thousands, certainly, in the new year. I mean, there are other apps like this, but one reason we featured it and that I think it's really promising is that schools don't have to pay anything for it. It's Sandy Hook Promise. They raise all of this money so that schools can use the system for free. And they will send, they'll either send people to train on campus or they have, you know, video training, but all of it is funded independent of the school, which, you know, there's just no downside for schools.
John Woodrow Cox is with us. He is a part of this story. School shootings have fueled a 2.7 million school safety industry, as he points out. That's yearly. This is a part of a series of stories that eventually will turn into a book. And John is with us. Let me talk about another part of your story. I'll read this graph here. 7 of the 23 surveyed schools had officers at the time of the shooting indicate that they played a direct role in limiting the harm. Still, what has happened in some cases in Dallas is exceedingly rare. The Post analysis identified just one other case over the past 19 years in which a resource officer gunned down an active shooter. Because we hear this a lot. I understand how people go to this. If we have more trained officers who are available at these schools, that can they respond in a quicker, more decisive, can they respond sooner than the police can arrive? Sounds like some of the stats that you have maybe belies that perception.
Well, you know, we know that at least in the 200, you know, we've created this database of school shootings and incidents of gun violence on campuses dating back all the way to 1999. And at least 40% of the affected schools employed an officer at the time. So, you know, I don't think it's obviously there's been a lot of attention paid to what happened in Parkland, that the officer didn't go into the building.
Yes.
But I think, you know, by and large, the reason that officers, resource officers can't intervene is because the shootings are over typically within a matter of seconds. So, you know, I think about a shooting I wrote about in Kentucky, in which, you know, more than a dozen kids were injured. And the shooting was over in less than 10 seconds. It was a kid who walked into a really packed commons area. He opened fire, and more than a dozen kids were injured. Two were killed. But unless you're a resource officer standing right next to that kid and your gun is drawn, the idea that you're going to intervene in less than 10 seconds is just unrealistic. So it's not to say that resource officers don't play some role in either, you know, helping kids who've been hurt. I think in some cases, the fact that the resource officer responds shortens the length of the shooting. But they simply, we know just based on the evidence that it's not a surefire thing. You cannot assume that a campus, even with three or four or five resource officers, that there's any kind of assurance that a campus won't experience an incident of gun violence. It's just not real, unfortunately.
You write about expos where ideas are available, including an Orlando expo, and you point out an individual who is a U.S. Army combat vet. And he believes that his solution makes sense, which involves the idea of embedding former special operation agents posting as teachers inside schools. Nobody has signed on for that, though, yet, right?
Yeah, no, nobody has yet. I mean, it's a kind of an outlandish idea, but,
right.
You know, part of the problem, though, is that kind of on both sides of this issue, and people say, oh, we need to arm teachers. And then the other side is, oh, that's absurd. You know, we need to ban guns. The problem is that we just don't have the research to say one way or the other. You know, we can't say definitively that arming teachers will save lives or if it will put more lives at risk. Because, you know, we certainly have a lot of incidents of guns accidentally firing or even we have shootings in which, you know, teachers and staff were the perpetrators. So it's one of those things, and this is true for all of gun violence in this country. The thing that we don't have nearly enough of is data. As this, you know, the CDC hasn't researched this
yep.
in decades. I mean, it's just that's where there's a gap. And that's the only way I think we're going to make progress with any of this is if we have really good research.
Right. And we also need people to be open-minded, too, that let's have the data, understand that people are going to have these preconceived ideas, and the data might match up. But if the data shows something different, which leads you to potentially a different conclusion or even looking at other ideas, I hope people will be willing to do that as opposed to continuing to point fingers at the other side.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, you know, there's misconceptions about assault rifles, even, you know, how often they're used in these shootings. Now, there's no question that the casualty figures are much, much higher when AR-15 style weapons are used. But the truth is that the vast majority of school shootings are committed with handguns, you know, and
exactly.
And that's I think there's plenty of lots of misconceptions. And it's not just on one side. It's on both sides. And it's because people tend to you know, believe what they want to believe.
Yep.
And what we need is hard data. And, you know, what we know is that hardening alone is not going to solve this problem. We cannot keep asking schools to solve the school shooting problem because so much is just beyond their control.
John, really enjoyed the conversation. We'll stay in touch. We'll look forward to more stories. And when the book comes out, we'll certainly talk then, if not hopefully many times sooner. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
John Woodrow Cox, again, he said the book will be out probably a couple of years from now, maybe even sooner than that. But again, if you want to read this story, it's a good read. School shootings have fueled a $2.7 billion school safety industry. What makes kids safer? WashingtonPost.com, 1251. That is our Lindus Construction Time Check. Time to create a more energy-efficient home with Season Guard windows. We're going to get treats here. Show. Lindsey Adam claims he's on a diet and won't participate. I just told him, knock it off. But then he and Laura told me it's National Bundt Cake Day.
What?
Yeah.
That does nothing for me.
Bundt cake? Overrated, underrated?
Honestly, I'd have to like look up a Bundt cake to know if I've had one.
I bet you have.
Probably.
I think it's fine.
You know what is underrated and I don't have it enough in my life? Angel food cake.
I think that's fine also.
Oh, with strawberries and whipped cream?
See, I am a big fruit guy in some areas. I don't like fruit on cake. I like fruit pies.
Ooh.
I don't like fruit.
Oh.
Like, do you like fruit on your cereal?
Yes.
Oh.
I rarely eat cereal, but there is nothing better than like that perfect point in summer when the berries are perfectly ripe.
Berries are so properly rated. I love berries.
They're so good.
I just don't like them in milk. I don't want my berries getting soggy.
But what about yogurt? Berries in yogurt is amazing.
I'm not the biggest yogurt person.
Well, I think that's a personal problem.
I've got many. You know that very well. I just can't find any yogurt at the grocery store. I mean,
there's just not enough opportunities for the yogurt company.
Honestly.
General Mills is really just, you know, letting us down as Minnesotans without enough yogurt options.
The grocery stores are now like 10% this, 90% of yogurt. Yogurt is on there. But Adam is saying he's on a diet. Not a lot. Come on. We got to celebrate.
Are we going to hold him down?
Yes.
Force him? Okay.
Yes.
I'm in.
Yeah. It's a week from Thanksgiving, so he must have a treat of some sort. And we're trusting Abby to come up with the right treat. Bill O'Reilly, next hour on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.